Welcome to Variant Frequencies. Month to month, our podcast brings you fiction stories from a different channel. Sci-fi, fantasy, horror, and some odd bands in between. Visit us at www.variantfrequencies.com. Hello, I'm Rick Stringer. It is time for another story from our Amarant collection. If you've been a regular listener to Variant Frequencies, then you are familiar with the fantastic voice of Chuck Tomasi. Well, a while back, Chuck sent me a note. He told me that his sister is a bit of a celebrity here in Traverse City, where Anne and I live. He said that she might be interested in reading for us. We are proud to say that not only was she interested in reading for us, but she gave us a great narration for the story. Marilyn Taylor brings to us her more than 25 years as a voiceover artist. Her resume is far too long for me to list it all here. We will have all of that on our MySpace and LiveJournal pages. Now, on to our story. Prisoners by Anne Stringer. A few weeks from retirement, a scientist looks back at her wasted life with regret. Now, at the end of her career, she is offered a chance to make a real difference to someone. But she's been safely sheltered for so long. Will she take the risk of a lifetime?
Prisoners by Anne Stringer. Good news, Patrick. All of your tests are normal. Again. Hallelujah, he replies, but he doesn't stop tossing the ball up and catching it when it drops. He's lying flat on his back on his bunk, staring at the ceiling, not bothering to look at me. I'm not telling him anything new. It's been a very long time since he's heard anything new. We've run out of tests to try. Again. Every now and then, some new way of measuring some component or another comes along and we try it on him. So far, they've all been unremarkably normal. He's long since stopped being excited about any of them. I've read through his records. It's my job to know him better than anyone else does. Back in the day, there were stacks of them. Some poor schlamozzle had to get all that paperwork transferred over to computers. Well, more than one, of course. There were stacks, and I had to read them. I confess I skimmed a lot. He's very old. How old? No one is really sure. Perhaps not even him. He looks about 25. Has looked that way the entire time I've known him. He never changes. Oddly enough, I was 25 when I met him. Fresh out of grad school, eager to change the world with scientific knowledge. Only I was recruited to babysit an immortal. Naturally, it wasn't phrased like that. Top secret government study, they said. It had to do with longevity. When I met Patrick, I thought they were kidding. But the money was so good. I know now why they chose me. It wasn't my brains or my talent so much as it was my lack of ties. Only child, parents dead, that sort of thing. I could disappear without too many ripples. I'm almost as much a prisoner as he is. I live here in this complex, and we have everything we need. It's almost like real life. Neighborhoods, shops, cable television. Only, we aren't allowed to leave without a security escort. They don't want us giving the secret of Patrick away, which is an absurd notion. Who would believe it? I know I didn't. I thought it was one of those crazy psychological studies. The ones where you think you're conducting the tests, but you're actually the subject? Like you think you're inflicting pain on somebody to study tolerance or motivation or some such. But they're actually watching you to see how much you like it, how far you'll go with it. I went along. I read reams of records on Patrick. I met him and interviewed him and acted like it was all real. We spent our days together back then. We talked about what was going on in the world. We ate, we worked, we ran every test they could think of. Every bodily fluid was analyzed and reanalyzed and analyzed again when new tests were invented. He was very attractive, still is. And I was pretty enough myself then and vain enough to think so. I suppose it was natural that we would fall into bed together, if anything is natural in this setting. I suspected we were watched. And in those days, that sort of behavior earned a lady a reputation. I didn't care. Figured I was the test subject. I allowed it to happen. Analyze this, you bastards. There were nights he would tell me about his past. He'd been a farmer, a blacksmith, a soldier with a sword, then again with a musket, and later with a machine gun. In between, he was both a thief and a merchant. I listened to his fantastic tales and I laughed, certain that it was all part of an elaborate hoax. He would grin, we would make love, and then fall into an exhausted sleep. It went on for a while until we both grew bored of it. No one ever said anything. And then eventually, I aged. Patrick didn't. I came to realize gradually that none of this was about me. It really was about Patrick. It was a bit of a blow to my ego. There was no flash of sudden insight, just gradual awareness that everything was exactly as it seemed. He was immortal. At least as far as we could measure such things. And I was his companion slash researcher. So I threw myself into it. I interviewed him in earnest then. What he remembered, what he knew, what he thought, what he felt. He went through the motions of cooperation. None of it was new to him. If he'd ever hoped for answers or felt any enthusiasm for the search, he'd lost it long ago. And night after night, I'd look into my mirror and I'd see a few more gray hairs, the beginnings of wrinkles. As time passed, I went from looking like Patrick's peer to his mother, and now his grandmother. He looks the same, ever the same. I confess it bothers me that at one time he would make love to me, but now the prospect seems absurd. I still have some vanity left. I was being ravaged by time, and I was furious that he was not. I confess I entertain notions of slipping poison into his food or a knife between his ribs. Then we'd see just how immortal he was. I'm also bitter that I've not had the experience of marriage, though that certainly wasn't something I thought I wanted when I was young and ambitious. Now, I'm within weeks of retirement, which I will continue to spend in this artificial town, in comfort for all my years of service, but alone. I've never had holidays with family, and now it's too late forever. I'm orienting someone to replace me. She reminds me of myself 40 years ago, bright, attractive, energetic. When I told her about Patrick, she expressed skepticism, as I had. But then I show her the photographs, part of Patrick's extensive records here. We had taken photos of him and me at 5-year intervals. I hate looking at them, but perhaps they will convince this young lady. We repeat the same pose, essentially standing next to each other, his arm around my shoulders and mine around his waist. In the first view, we look like a young couple in love, or perhaps that's just my fancy. After that, my age becomes apparent. At first, the changes are hard to define precisely. I just look older than the man I'm with. But then, gray threads appear in my hair, lines on my face. My skin loses its youthful flow and starts to sag. Still, I stand next to Patrick and smile for the camera. My replacement stares at the series of pictures for a long time. I watch her. "Why don't you just let him go?" she asks softly, apparently appalled as I was at just how long he'd been held here. I give her the same answer they'd given me. "He's been out of society far too long now. He wouldn't be able to function out there anymore." I think of her as the new girl, because she seems so young. Amelia is her name, but she asks me to call her Amy. "Amelia is so old-fashioned," she says with an apologetic smile. Apologetic, I suppose, because I look so old. I show her the facility, mostly driving around in one of those electric golf carts. The place is too big and would take too much time to walk. I help her settle into her apartment. She's chatty and enthusiastic, telling me of her plans for her space, most of which include potted plants. "They add oxygen to the air," she explains. I'm barely listening. I show her Patrick's records and tell her she will need to familiarize herself with them over the next few months. Then I ask her if she would like to meet him. "Yes, of course," she says. We meet in an interview room. Neutral territory. Amy and I are sitting at a table when Patrick walks in. He pauses just inside the door, and she stands. He stops as if frozen to the spot. His eyes widen just a touch and his mouth opens, but no sound emerges. I follow his gaze to her, and her eyes are also wide. She's staring at him with open longing. They know each other. But that's not possible. In less time than it takes to tell, the moment passes. Patrick's familiar, lazy expression is back, and he ambles to the table and slumps into a chair. Amy smiles brightly as I introduce them. I leave them alone to get acquainted. There's no danger to either of them. The room is under constant surveillance. I do some busy work, but occasionally glance at the camera's feed. They sit at the table, chatting easily. It must have been my imagination. It's only after I've escorted her to her apartment, returned to my own, had dinner, and gotten ready for bed, that it comes to me. Standing there, staring into the mirror, toothbrush in hand, I realize Amy is an immortal too. That's the only way to account for the flash of recognition, the joy on both their faces. If she is as young as she appears, there is no possible way they could know each other. My mind races. Just her presence here answers one of the biggest questions. Is Patrick the only one? With another, we can compare his studies to hers, rather than his to the rest of us. This could advance the research by leaps. I have to take a pill to get any sleep. In the morning, my common sense prevails. I was imagining things, surely. If there is another one like him, this is the last place she'd come. I watched her as we worked together, seeing only the enthusiasm and energy of youth. If I see anything suspicious, I will confront her. But there's nothing to see. She's friendly to Patrick, but she's just as nice to me. She pores over his records, even assessing them from her apartment. Then I study what she's been studying, and I notice a pattern. She's focusing on the scientific angle, imaging, blood tests, and genetics in particular. She skips right over the psychological profiles and the day-to-day stuff. She's not trying to get to know him. She already does. Suspicion grows in me, and I watch her. She begins to notice and casts occasional nervous glances my way. I am torn. Sometimes I'm convinced she's like he is, and I'm very excited about the possibilities for study. Other times, I think it's wishful thinking, and it's crazy. And then I tell myself, we have one immortal in this compound. Why not two? I decide to speak plainly with her and invite her to my apartment for tea. I have a little patio garden just off the deck outside my kitchen. I'm picking suckers off the tomato plants when she arrives. Like me, she's dressed in casual, relaxed mode. Nice garden, she says. Thank you. I wipe dirt from my hands. They smell like tomato plants, a scent I've always loved. It reminds me of my childhood, I suppose. She kneels and helps me gently prune the plants. I find I'm pleased to see she knows something about gardening. It seems I lost track of time, I say. She smiles. No hurry. I get up slowly. Tending this garden is murder on my back. Amy extends a hand to help, and we go into my apartment. I wash my hands at the kitchen sink, and then put on a kettle to boil. Jasmine pearls, I decide. It's a special occasion. I put a plate of Mandelbrot on the table, then pour the water from the whistling kettle over the tea. We sit and watch as the blossom unfurls, releasing its sweet fragrance into the room. And then I pour. Neither one of us has spoken a word. I sip, then pick up a cookie and nibble. She stirs sugar into her cup. Maybe she thinks this will be small talk, or perhaps work-related. An evaluation session, most likely. But I decide to get right to the point. I think you're like he is. The spoon stops mid-stir. In what way? Her expression hasn't changed. She's cool, I'll give her that. Immortal, I say bluntly. Why on earth would you think that? She asks, laying the spoon next to the cup, folding her hands together, maybe to stop them from shaking. I shrug. I've noticed things, I say. I think you and Patrick knew each other before he came here. That's absurd, she says. She looks at her teacup, but doesn't pick it up. Is it? I ask. What do you think would happen if I took my absurd notion up the chain of command? They might think I'm a paranoid old woman and dismiss me. Or they might be interested enough to take a closer look. You might go from scientist to lab rat. And while they trust Patrick not to leave, because he's been here so long, they might tighten security for you. She looks stricken, but says nothing. I push further. What will they see in 10 years, Amy? Or 20? She picks up her cup and takes a sip, which seems to calm her. We need your help, she says finally. Can we talk here? I nod. There are cameras all over the facility, but they don't bother with the staff living quarters, and they certainly trust me after 40 years. My pulse races, but I maintain outwardly calm. You are like Patrick, then? Yes. We were together for a long time. Every now and then we would live apart as whims took us in different directions, but we always find each other again. Then he disappeared. She sighs. It took decades to get an inkling of where he'd gone, then more years to try to find a way in. I went the education route and applied for the position here, but they hired you. She smiles to show there are no hard feelings. So I had to wait and do it all again. Why has he never tried to leave? I ask, assuming that's what they want my help with. He wants to know. He hoped that your studies, your research, would answer his questions. He's lost hope, I say flatly. I thought finding him being with him would be enough, she says, her voice touched with desperation. But we want out, and he thinks you can help. Let me fix us some lemonade, I say. I need time to think. By the time we're sitting on the deck, sipping our drinks, I'm calmer and have come to a decision. I've added vodka to the lemonade, and it helps. As you've seen, I say, conversationally, it's very difficult to get in here. It may not be that hard to get out. You'll help us then? Well, why not? The idea excites me, and for the first time in a very long time, I feel like I'm doing something worthwhile. I know where they park the military vehicles and the supply trucks. It's along the route I walk every day, I say. I'm such a creature of habit. The keys are usually in them. We could just drive out? She asks, surprised. I shrug. If you're in uniform and you look like you know what you're doing, I don't see why not. I don't think the security types have any idea what really goes on in this section. Don't they guard the vehicles, though? She's excited, leaning forward, but still wants to examine all the angles. There will probably only be one chance. Sure, but again, if you're in uniform. She sits back. But where do we get the uniforms? I smile. I know where the laundry is. Even so, it isn't easy. I'm a creature of habit, and any activity out of the ordinary could arouse suspicion. I do have a very nice dress I've worn only once, years ago, to some function or another. It's hopelessly out of style, I'm sure, but then so am I. That evening, I take it with me and head for the laundry. I explain to the board clerk what I want done with it. She glances at her watch. She was about to lock up. There's a dry cleaner in the village, she says. There are military uniforms hanging behind her. I manage what I hope is a disgusted look. They don't know what they're doing. I have no idea if that's actually true. The last time I took something there, she heaves an exaggerated sigh, obviously not wanting to listen to a story from a long-winded old lady. Fine, she says, taking the dress. I'll see what I can do. Come back tomorrow, late. She slides me a ticket, which I take and turn away. And so does she, taking my dress somewhere to the back. I feel an adrenaline rush. I have only seconds. I grab two uniforms from the rack, roll them up, and stuff them into a pillowcase, and walk away. I hear the door close and bolt behind me. Amy fixes dinner for the three of us in her apartment. Apparently, she became a gourmet cook at some point. I've never had a meal like this. She changes into one of the uniforms while I clip Patrick's hair short. I've never seen him like this. And I smile as I run a hand over the little bit of fuzz on his head. He smiles up at me. Come with us, he says. Immediately I shake my head. The idea terrifies me. I've been here for too long, I say. I couldn't function out there anymore. There's no reason for this place if I'm gone, he says, with no vanity, just concern for me. Actually, there is, I say. I may have found something in your DNA. It's insulated itself in there pretty damn tight, sort of like a virus, except it's not using you to reproduce itself. I'm excited now, in full scientist mode. My theory is that it's making your cells reproduce perfectly, without loss or aging. It'll take years to sort it all out. Amy has come out of her bedroom, in uniform. It's a little big on her, but it'll pass. Her hair is done up in a severe bun. Her eyes light up and she smiles to see Patrick's buzzed scalp. Then she looks at me. You've made some progress? Maybe, I say cautiously. It would help if I could have some of your blood for comparison. Of course, she says, already rolling up her sleeve. I have a vial of her blood by the time Patrick comes out. His uniform fits like it was tailored to him. His boots aren't precisely right, but in the dark they'll pass. He's tall, straight, and handsome. Wow, Amy and I say in unison. I glance out the window. It's full night. You should go, I say. Patrick hugs me. I'm afraid for you, he says. What they might do. They won't do anything to me, I reply. They won't know I've helped you. The good news, I have helped you. I hope it's true. Amy hugs me next, whispering, thanks. And then they're gone. At a leisurely pace, I turn off the lights in her apartment and lock the door as I leave, making my way back to my home. Once there, I fix a cup of tea, chamomile this time. I sit in front of the television, like I do every evening. I don't turn it on, though. Instead, I listen for sirens or helicopters or whatever noises will tell me that Patrick and Amy have been discovered escaping. The night stays quiet.
The amaranth flower, sacred to the goddess Artemis, did not fade or wither, and so symbolized immortality. You have just heard Prisoners, another tale of immortality, part of a collection by Anne Stringer and Matt Wallace. Listen for more stories of the amaranth in future episodes of Variant Frequencies. Thank you for listening to Prisoners by Anne Stringer, narrated by Marilyn Taylor. The music for this story was provided by Digital Juice. To find out more about Variant Frequencies, please go to our website at www.variantfrequencies.com. If you like Variant Frequencies, tell your friends about us. Thank you. From the Variant Frequencies team, Matt Wallace, Anne Stringer, and Rick Stringer.
The Seventh Son podcast novel trilogy, author J.C. Hutchins sent you underground to a secret human cloning factory. You clawed your way to the surface. You survived. Prepare to head into hell again. Welcome to Brinkvale Psychiatric Hospital, the setting for Hutchins' next novel, the supernatural thriller, Personal Effects. Dark art. It's a rotten place with a bloody history. 9 stories of howling madness built inside an abandoned brownstone quarry. Locals call it the Brink. And now, J.C. Hutchins and creator Jordan Weissman are opening the doors of their bloody creation before the book's June bookstore debut. But you're not getting a guided tour of the Brink. You're being committed. Become a part of publishing history by admitting yourself to the Brink and becoming a patient of art therapist Zach Taylor. Inject yourself into the personal effects universe. Create a patient profile. Receive your admittance papers. Contribute artwork. And earn the insanely cool privilege to appear on Brinkvale Psychiatric's official website. Find your first art assignment now at jchutchins.net/thebrink. fill out your patient paperwork, submit your art, and come back for more assignments. Get creative. Get crazy. Get committed. Go to jchutchins.net/thebrink for more information, or visit jchutchins.net/personal effects to learn more about the book, coming this June.
My name is Angel. I've lived over 200 years, and half that time was spent slaughtering the innocent. But then I fed on a gypsy girl, and my world turned upside down. Now I fight for the innocent. So when the chips are down and you're at the end of your rope, you need someone that you can count on. And that's what you'll find at Angel Investigations. Someone that will go all the way, no matter what. So don't lose hope. Come on over to our offices and you'll see that there's still heroes in this world. But if you want to be a hero, join the cast and crew of Angel Between the Lines. Auditions are being held from March 7th to March 21st over at angelbetweenthelines.com.
Imagine a giant circus that runs around the clock and features ring after ring of attractions for fans of science fiction, art, science, and new media. Wouldn't you want to run away to that circus?
Now you can, because this very show, which goes by the name of Balticon, is coming to Marriott's Hunt Valley Inn, just north of Baltimore on Memorial Day weekend. From May 22nd to 25th, you can join over 1,000 other fans in a huge celebration. Charles Stross, one of science fiction's hottest writers, will be there, as will Kurt Miller, whose covers have graced many science fiction novels, and renowned singer Mary Crowell, and you can spend time with all of them. Love art? Go to the art show and view work by some of science fiction's masters, and if you fall for a piece, you can buy it! Interested in film or anime? Rooms with both are always available. Care to play a game? From tabletop games to live-action role-playing, gamers are ready for you to join in. Like to dress up? Join one of the best and largest costume contests on the East Coast. Want to laugh? Attend the special spoken word and comedy performance. Interested in new media? Balticon features the longest-running, best, and largest new media track available anywhere, with some of the most famous names in podcasting and webcomics. This year, attending as special guest of honor, is New York Times best-selling author Scott Sigler, the first author to release a novel in podcast-only form. Come meet him. For more information, drop by our website, www.balticon.org, or listen to our podcast at www.balticonpodcast.org. Join us May 22nd to the 25th. Balticon, you're never too old to run away and join the circus.